That'll help right there, too.
That'll help a lot.
Let's see. Hold on. Yep, see? Cheeseburger, cheeseburger, cheeboogie, cheeboogie, cheeboogie. Remember, one of that was on, one of that Saturday Night Live, and cheeboogie, 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 cheeboogie. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was funny when John, all those, yeah, they were funny. Yeah. A bunch of them. It was John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase. Mm-hmm. All right, what we're going to do tonight, since we've got Slim Pickens, instead of because this I've got up here for us is so awesome that I don't want to do it tonight. And then something, well, you know what? Maybe I can do it tonight and do it again next week. Maybe one of us will catch on. Maybe I can catch on. Well, you know what? I like I said, God, I don't know if it's God's sense of humor or God's sense of timing. But we were in the third week of this, and again, I thought I was going to be doing personality disorders. And instead, I'm doing human communication, which is a psych course. So I'm doing a psych. So it's not just communicating. It's how to communicate and how we go about communicating. So I'm in the second week of that. It's a seven-week semester. The way to do it is a 14-week semester. I'm full-time. To be full-time online, you have to have two classes. But the way to do it is do 7 weeks of one and 7 weeks of the other. They're abbreviated, but you're only doing one class at a time. So it makes it easier to concentrate. Because like in one psych class, at the end of 7 weeks, I had done 30 essays and labs and a little project. This one here, I do two essays a week and do a quiz a week. And I'm working on two projects. It's really once you get used to it. And I'm used to stepping on a banana peel anyway, so it just takes care of any free time I got. I ain't got to worry about it. I know. You want free time. Well, that one page you get here started out as maybe 4 or 5 pages, and I condensed it down. And condensed it down and condensed it down. And condense it down. All right. So what we're going to do is, instead of going over that, let's just open the floor. And actually, it can be about anything, but I'm hoping you'll think about communication and how to handle things. And we'll talk about that. And I can throw out some stuff, too, to start with. I'll go ahead and start it out with something, and we may wind up getting it later on as a Tuesday night service, or maybe a Sunday morning sermon. But I'm gonna go ahead tonight and just kind of throw it out there. There's a feedback loop. If you're gonna communicate, remember I told you communication should not be a tennis match where you're trying to pop it to them, which we do that a lot. You pop it to them and not give them a chance to respond. You just want to go ahead and get over with, tell them what you think and say, well, I guess I told them. You know, well, I had somebody in my family that talks like that all the time. And they had actually, to be honest with you, had really kind of made me feel very uncomfortable last week when I was trying to visit with him. And these even actually hurt my feelings. And I tried not to show it, But then I realized, okay, then as this person, as I go to talk to this person a few more times during the week, I'm just going to have to, I timed it. I said it takes about 5 minutes before they start. So I'd go there for 5 minutes and leave. So I still showed them I loved them. I still took care of them. I brought them stuff when they were hungry, did whatever I could to help. But after 5 minutes, I'd leave. And so today, when the timing was right, I talked to them. I said, I guess you want to know why I only stayed 5 minutes at a time. And this is not Linda's parents either, or over on Linda's side, okay? I mean, this is over on the crazy Linton side, okay? And, yeah, who knew? And so I told him, I said, okay, if you want to know why things seem kind of strained and why I only kept 5 minutes at a time, they said, yeah, I would like to know that. And here's what you do. This is communication skills. I could say, you made me feel. That's not going to work. Whenever you're going to go into a criticism mode and or explain yourself mode, use a lot of I. When all this stuff happened, I felt blah, blah, blah. Not you made me feel, I felt blah, blah, blah. If you're going to praise somebody, then you go with the you. So praising is you. Criticizing, or when I say criticize, I don't talk about criticizing in a negative way, just explaining how you feel. I. So I told him, I said, I felt, and when all those things went down, this is how I felt, and I could be wrong, but this is, you know, and then I felt the person go, I knew they were going to do this. I knew they were going to throw it back on me. And so I said, well, you know, it actually was you. And I went, well, no. Don't worry. I know what I felt when this stuff happened. And so, no, it wasn't me. Just after a couple of times of it happening, I may have been a little bit more sensitive to it, but I know what was happening. And the person said, you know what? I did not realize I was doing this. Please forgive me. If it happens again ever, I want you to stop me right then and tell me, because I do not intend to degrade you any way whatsoever. And so that was a very good conversation. Now, if I'd have gone over there and just said, jumped up and said, you make me sick at my stomach, blah, 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 then this would have ended up a very bad way. Now, matter of fact, that person would have been offended. That person would have said, you know, it's like the old couple sitting in the swing on their 50th anniversary, and the man looks over at the woman and says, our love has been tried and true. She couldn't hear good. She said, excuse me? He said, our love has been tried and true. She said, I can't hear you. He said, our love has been tried and true. She said, what? He said, our love has been tried and true. She says, well, that's okay. I'm sick of you too. Okay. So, getting back with this thing, though, I think, again, when you're talking with someone, remember, there's constructive criticism and there's destructive criticism. And now we'll be talking about this. This was part in here, but we'll just talk about it next week. But this part here, destructive. When I use destructive, all right, just say, for instance, Bethany wrote a little story. She didn't, but just say you did. That way it's all hypothetical. And, okay, if I looked at her story, if I was going to be destructive, I'd say something like, that looks like a third grader wrote that. You expect me to read this? I couldn't pay attention to it. It wouldn't keep me awake no time whatsoever. That's destructive criticism, and that will deflate her. Maybe not. No, I wrote it like a third grader so you could understand it, Dad. Look, here you go. But now here is, to start with it did. And just like Stephen King, or there's this guy, I shouldn't have said his name to start with, guy wrote this novel, and he took it to every publishing company he could find. Everybody said it was junk. They didn't want to have anything to do with it. He threw it in trash cans. His wife took it. took it to another publishing company that was published, and the rest is history with Stephen King. The same way with another man who said, listen to this, I've tried company after company after company. Obviously, this is a piece of junk. It'll never work. I'm so depressed, I will never write again. And he took it and threw it in the trash can. His wife took it and took it to a publishing company. They took it and they published it. And it was, listen, Norman Vincent Peale, the power of possibility thinking. He got so depressed. Okay, but look, so yeah, because he was retired. So what I'm gonna tell you is this though, Bethany and I, here's that this deflate. I deflate her. So the way I handle it is with constructive criticism is, Bethany, that is so awesome. That kept my attention. I didn't even know you had that in you. That's awesome. And since I've been doing this for a while, do you think I could show you some pointers that'll make it even more fascinating? Now, what about that one? That's constructive criticism. Okay. Well, I remember, yes, she did. She was telling about how she got adopted, and the teacher told me that she had everybody in there crying. And they even come to me and said, I mean, she had everybody tore up. Yeah, she did. She did very good. She did very good with that. Yeah. Okay. So again, destructive criticism deflates. Constructive criticism inflates. And you have to go between, and you have here's the lines you got to go between with anybody you're working with: apathy and ego. They're somewhere in between apathy and ego. I think me and you had even talked about the apathy and ego. Everybody's somewhere in between apathy and ego. Apathy is you just don't care, and ego is I really care, especially when it comes to me. I've heard people say, I'm talking to somebody and they won't quit talking about themselves. And they go, okay, enough of me talking about me. You talk about me for a while. Yeah. So again, now with all that in mind, I'm just going to leave the floor open. I've thrown something out there now. Apathy, ego, somewhere in between. And we all fight it. We have to fight apathy. There was one guy that said he was ignorant and apathetic. He said, well, I don't know and I don't care. I know. I was thinking we're on tape now. Just know the tape player. The tape's rolling. Okay. Yes. They're not trying to manifest their ego. They're very egotistical. How do you confront them? Why do you want to confront them? No, like that. Here's one way you can do it. If you take them to their self, don't do it in front of people. Take them to their self and go, it all depends on who they are, because some people can take constructive criticism very well. I can take constructive criticism, but I despise destructive criticism. Matter of fact, at Procter & Gamble, we used to get I called it judged, but they called it what was it called? We had it twice a year, and then we got raises by it. And I'm trying to think of what it was. Performance evaluations. It was something like it, but they had a special name for it. And all the management got together, and they would throw everybody in the pile, and they had so many people be in this pile, this pile, this pile, this pile. And so, And so, I remember, when we were having these things, I'd go in and I'd listen to them. They'd say, here's your evaluation. I hear them talking. I go, wow, listen to what they've said. I probably won't get a raise for another 10 years. They go, okay, you've been promoted. The funniest thing was one day, one night, I started at the plant from the house. This was back before PCs and all that. So I had this box that had like a ticker tape. And I would get online. I didn't get online. I went on the telephone. And the telephone served as the modem. Okay. And so I would start the plant, and I would, and this is Procter & Gamble, a very big plant. It was 27 acres under the main roof, big plant. And so I'd go there and I'd start up all the areas. After I got them started up, I'd monitor them. And every person that worked in there in engineering had to have 1 week at a time where they were monitoring it overnight. Well, I'd already started at the plant, and so I'm in there monitoring it. Well, I came in to engineering, and I got promoted over this other guy, and he didn't like that. He didn't like anybody being over him, you know, this way. And so he tried his best to make me look bad. Every chance he got, he tried to make me look bad. Kind of felt like I was Republican. I felt like a Republican president or senator, and he was the fake media. But every time I turn around, he'd find some way to make me look bad. Well, one day, he got in there, and he got talking junk about me, and I was doing some kind of project. I think, I can't remember what the project was, but it was one of the biggest projects I'd been given yet. And it was bigger than his project, and that made him mad. And so I'm doing the project. He comes up and he says, tells the boss man, says, blah, 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 blah. He's not doing this right. He's not doing that. Blah, 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 blah. And so the boss man calls me over, and I go stand over there. And he never asked me a word. The boss never asked me a word. I looked over at him and said, when David needs your help, he will ask for it. But until he asks for it, I suggest you leave him alone. I went, and so, okay. And so this night I started at the plant. I was really tired. And I thought it was nuisance alarms that were going off. I was the one that fixed it. It used to be just one alarm, and you had to check it. I fixed it so it would tell you what the alarms were. And I thought it was a nuisance alarm. And so I quit getting up. And I just went ahead and went back to sleep. And I got to the plant at 7 o'clock, and that guy was in the control room. And he said, got you now. I said, have you got me now? He said, you got that alarm about the sump, didn't you? I said, yes, a nuisance alarm. He said, no, it weren't. He said, the sump was losing water. He said, and we have shut down half the plant. And that's millions of dollars. He said, we shut down half the plant. And I went, uh-oh. He said, I love it. And so we go to the meeting that morning. And he says, they're going to get you. They're going to get you. As we're going out in the meeting, my boss man, who was the module manager, said, David, I need you to come downstairs where the reprimand room was. I need you down here when you come out of the meeting. And that other guy said, got you now, buddy. I got you now. And so he went and sat across the cafeteria, right? So he went and sat down in the cafeteria. I prayed. I said, God, I thought it was a nuisance alarm. I would never do this on purpose. And so he's over there with the other guys waiting, just to see me get all beat up. I go into the room and I sit down, and the man says, David, I am so impressed with your project work. I'm so impressed with your engineering. He says, I want you to know something. He said, as of today, you're getting, and this was back in the 80s. He said, as of today, you're getting, like, you see, the $20, $30, $40 a week raise. He said, you're getting a raise. And he said, all you're getting a raise, you're getting a promotion. And he says, just keep working hard. I really like your work. I said, but what about the nuisance alarm? And I said, what about the sump? He goes, oh, that happens. He said, just don't let it happen again. I said, okay. And I walked out, and another guy was waiting for me, so when I walked out, I went, I just got a raise and a promotion. And so I walked out and went, and he said, uh-huh, he got you, didn't he? He got you, didn't he? I knew he was going to get you. I said, he got me. I said, I didn't see it coming. I was talking about the promotion. Matter of fact, that promotion put me, I was just under him. That promotion put me beside him. And so and he said, I bet you won't do that anymore, will you? And I said, I'll try not to. I walked off and never told him what really happened. But again, there's people that try to hurt you. This guy here always talked about himself. And one day we were walking down the hallway, and there was the plant manager, there was a module manager, a department manager, and a team manager. So all these managers from here all the way down are walking with me and him. And he goes, talk to me, David. Talk to me, David. Go ahead. Talk to me, David. And I said, you know, Abraham Lincoln had a saying. He says, what's that? I said, it's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than open your mouth and remove all doubt. And when they had all those managers started laughing, and the guy just kept on. I mean, the guy shut up for a few minutes anyway. But the way I handled that guy is by myself with him. I would say, look, man, there's no sense in this. Not around everybody else. I get by myself. And I just said, there's no sense in this. We're all trying to make money to feed our families. We're all trying to keep this company moving forward so we can keep here and keep a job. Is there a way we can call a truce on this? Yes, you do. Uh-huh. Everywhere, fountain, everywhere, wherever you work, they're everywhere. Bethany, look, Bethany, you just asked me a question. I don't think we've ever answered, have we? How do you handle somebody that's egotistical? It all depends on if they're your boss or if they're an equal. If you're talking about me, I know you're not talking about me. I know that. So, is it somebody equal to you, or is it somebody that's a boss, or somebody that's an elder to you? Is it somebody that's below you as far as age-wise? Or are you just still being hypothetical? And that's a good answer, because you don't. All right, if it's somebody, like I used to tell the boys never little, and told you too, that life doesn't consist of us trying to make you happy. Now you remember, since you even spoke up before I could finish it. Yeah, we're not here just to make you happy. We're here to make a family setting. And one of the good things I do with people is I say there's no I in team. If you look at it backwards. Okay. Okay. Anybody else got any suggestions? Tell her how to handle somebody's egotistic. That's a good one, but sometimes that don't get it. Yeah, you got to sow grace. Always sow grace. Everything you see, your speech has to be seasoned with salt. How would you handle it, Stephen? I've had people egotistical. There's another way I've handled it. And as I prayed for God to, Lord, if I'm going to have to talk to him, open the door. And I guarantee you, there's been times where they have come to me and said, I don't understand why people don't like me. Or I don't understand why people are having a hard time with me. Can you please explain to me? And I'll go, do you really want to hear? If you really want to hear, I'll talk to you. And they go, what? And I said, it's all about you, man. If you can get you out of the way, things will change. And I've watched them do that and go, wow, I'm so glad of that. I'm so glad you told me that. I've had it happen at Fountain, had it happen at Procter & Gamble. I prayed about it. And just like today, we're riding down the road and I called, but the phone was dropping. I said, well, maybe Lord, it's not time for me to talk to that family member. And then they called me back and said, you call me? And I said, yes. And I said, are you in a good position where you can talk? And can you understand every word I'm saying? Several times. And they said, yes. And I said, I just would like you to know why things seemed so uneasy last week. And I said, it's because when all this happened, I felt that my opinion was not valued. And I felt that I was considered less than. And I felt, I could be wrong, I felt. You know, and also I felt like I was rubbing a sore in you. And so I want to apologize for that, but that's why I stayed away. And they went, no. We very much value your opinion. And yes, you're intelligent. No, don't you stop. I said, no, I'm just telling you how I felt. I said, because I know when I get around other people, I don't feel that way, but I sure felt this way, you know. And I said, I felt this way for quite a while. And I said, well, just from now on, you just tell me. If I'm Bill doing that, you let me know, and I'll stop it. But see, I handled it in that way. If I hadn't handled it that way, I'm telling you. No, it got no. It would state that it got worse. Yeah. That's what I always do with my people. I said, talk to me. Talk to me. I want to hear what's going on. Talk to me. I know I've told this before. Maybe even told it recently. If I have, y'all let me know so I won't bore you to death. But I was at Fountain, and I was on the other side of the plant, and one of the engineers came to me and said, David, they called me. And I said, what's wrong? I said, come quick. One of my engineers was a bodybuilder. And he was in the Army Reserve, and he had seen action. So he's a bad dude. He goes up, and Christy calls me. She says, get up here quick. I said, what? Said, Kevin, who was the plant manager, had aggravated Anthony. Matter of fact, here's what had happened. Anthony was up there doing what he was supposed to do. He was sitting in the boat, writing down procedures. Tell me how this is supposed to go, and is this the way you do this? What happens next? What about this? Well, tell me what. That's what you got to do. You got to ask every question, because once we get through with our stuff and take pictures, then what we do is we have a way to build that boat the same way every time. It's called ISO 9000. And so that's what he was doing. I couldn't put Christy out there because she was divorcing her husband who worked out there. Okay, so she didn't want to go out there. And the other girl, I wouldn't have put her out there if I had to. Okay, so that was not her cup of tea. So, out of the three that I had, he was the one that had to be there. And so, and we didn't have any interns, because in the summertime we'd have interns. We'd have like two interns, but we didn't have any interns. So, Hanky's, I walk in the room and Hanky's going, kid you not, big as an ox. He's going, oh, sorry. He weren't doing this. And my back is still sore from that couch. Me and Barney Fife moved Saturday. And he's going, and he was like, he's blowing up every time he blurry breathed. And he says, I'm going to kill him. 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 I said, hold on, Anki, what's going on? He said, Kevin just cussed me out in front of everybody and said I was not allowed on that production floor anymore. And said he went and got the vice president. in here, and the vice president told me that I was not allowed on the floor anymore. And I said, calm down. I said, Anki, do you trust me? See, I said, I'll handle it. Sit down. Breathe. Sit down. Now, I could have gone there and got all in his face, plant manager's face, and I could have cussed him like he cussed my man, all that stuff. But no. I went and walked out, and I saw the vice president. And so I carried him in. I said, can I talk to you for a minute? He said, sure. I said, come here. And we go in a little room, and I do it privately. I came in a little room. I shut the door, and I said, I hope you know that your plant manager just cussed my guy out and wanted to come up on the floor. He said, I know. I okayed it. He can't come back. And again, instead of getting in his face or whatever, I put my arm around him. No, I didn't strangle him. I put my arm around him, and I pat him in the chest. And I said, oh, come on now. He says, no, I mean it. He can't come out back out there. I said, can I ask you a question? He says, what? I said, aren't we all adults? He says, sure, we're all adults. I said, aren't we all trying to make a living for everybody out here? He says, sure. I said, aren't we trying to make Mr. Fountain look good so we can keep on having a living? He said, sure. I said, since we're all adults and we're trying to make a living and we're trying to make it good, then you can't. Our job is so important because we make sure it's made the right way every time. He said, I know. Y'all do a good job. But he can't come out here anymore. I said, oh, come on now. I said, again, aren't we all adults? He said, yeah. I said, then what's going to stop him from coming out here when he's the only one I can put out here? He said, well, put Christy out. I said, Christy can't come out here because she's divorcing her husband. He said, well, yeah. He said, what about the other girl? I said, no, I wouldn't put her out here. And he goes, well, I said, look, I just said it. Aren't we all adults? He said, yes. And I said, aren't we trying to do the same thing, work for the same person? He said, yes. And I had my arm around him. And so I popped him on the chest again. Of course, he went, I popped him on the chest again. And I said, you got to cut me some slack, bro. And he said, you know, you make a lot of sense. I said, good. I said, so can my man come back out here? He says, yes. I said, how about go tell the plant manager? He said, you go tell him. So now I'm going out to the man that cussed my guy. So I go out there, and this guy normally just, here's what the plant manager does all the time. This is it. And today I go in there in the boat, and I go in the boat. He's in there in the head. So he's got him. They got him in the toilet in a boat, and it's hot. And he's sweating bullets, and he's banging, and he's doing stuff. And I walked in, and I climbed in and stood there beside him, and I said, having a bad day, ain't you, bro? Again, I could have jumped him. I didn't. I said, having a bad day, ain't you, bro? And he said, yeah, I've had better. And I put my hand on his shoulder. And I said, I'm here to tell you something. He said, what? I said, I talked to Bill. He said, you did? He says, you know all about all this. I said, yeah. I said, I've talked to Bill. And me and Bill got it all worked out. I said, Anki's coming back out on the floor. He said, I figured you'd do that. And I said, I just wanted you to know that. He said, well, I'm glad you told me. And I said, now, there's one more request I have for you. He says, what's that? I said, next time you have the notion to cuss one of my people, I want you to get on the phone and call me and cuss me instead. Because when you cuss him, you're cussing me. So just go ahead and get to the top of the line. Go ahead and get me. And he said, I would never cuss you. I said, no, you didn't hear me. Next time you feel like you have a need to cuss one of my people, you call me and cuss me instead. And he said, I would never cuss you. I said, well, then don't you ever cuss any of my people again. And he said, okay. And I put my arm on, I patted him on the arm again, and I kind of pushed him around a little bit, kind of, you know, chubbing with him. And I said, we okay? He said, we're okay. I said, all right. And so I walked out. I had left Fountain. And I'd been gone for 2 or 3 years. That guy had finally quit Fountain, and he was working somewhere else. And I walked into Walmart one day back in the deli section, and he was all the way over the other side. And he saw me, and he ran to me. Bethany was talking just there. Yeah, he ran to me. And when he ran to me, he put his arms around me and grabbed me and hugged me all back and forth like this. And he said, "How you doing, man? How you doing?" I said, "I'm doing good. How you doing?" He said, "I just want you to know something." I said, "What?" He said, "I love you, man." Yeah. But that's the same guy that was working in the head that day. And if I'd have handled it wrong, he may have thrown something at me in the produce section, the deli section. So again, have I always handled everything perfect? No. Do I handle everything perfect now? No. No. But I keep trying. We all have to keep trying. So, with all that said, how would you handle Mr. Egotistic? No. I'm going to change it then. It's one of your workers that work under you. No. Embarrassing them is not helping anything. Matter of fact, if you embarrass them and they're egotistical, they will take it worse than somebody that's not egotistical. Okay? That's good. Now, what if it was your boss? I prayed for my bosses, and I waited for them. I'd pray for my boss, and I'd say, "God, open the door." When that door opens, though, Well, sometimes you have to. When God opens the door, God, I need wisdom to see when the door's open and wisdom to handle when it does open. And courage to confront. It takes courage to confront. Oh, yeah. This morning, Linda sent me this thing. She said, and it's the Avengers. And they're all standing here, the Avengers, Captain America, and Wonder, whoever they are, the Fire and the Hulk and all this and Thor. And it's the Arrow. Who's the Arrow guy? There's Hawkeye. Hawk. But here it is. Look. And it says, when you have a team, when you have that team, and you, when you have that team, and you know you're going to have a good shift. She said, I sent that to my crew today and with a thank you. And then she sent a second one and said, and the guy that works closest with her, he sent a picture of Larry, Curly, and Mo. And he said, funny, but a lot of days I feel more like this. Mr. Fountain, I think it would depend on who. From what I've always been able to tell about him, it all depends on the situation. Because if somebody was to cuss out one of his good guys that didn't mess up a lot, didn't mess up, he'd have a problem with that. But if it was somebody that was known to be slack, I really don't think he'd have a bad problem with it. I tell you what, I get called to personnel often. And The personnel manager was a female, and when she had to fire somebody for disciplinary action, not because they just got fired, disciplinary action, because they cut you a lot of slack, she would call me and say, "I need you to walk out with me." As I'd walk out with him, I'd see him going, "I'm so," and I'd go, "Stop it." I said, look at what's happening right now. I said, they didn't fire you. You fired you. Now, don't get upset with her. She's doing her job. And they go, you're right, man. You're right. And, of course, I always put my arm around them. You know, after, I didn't go right to start with my arm around them. Someone didn't want your arm around them right to start with. But as I got talking with them, I saw them calming down. And I tell them, and the worst one was when I got called in one department. The guy said, I think you need to come here. I said, what is it? He said, I just fired your brother-in-law. And I said, it's about time. Nope. That's not good. Yeah, well, see, my brother-in-law was an Italian from New York, a real Italian from New York, and he would cuss like he would make a sailor look like a saint. And I was safety manager, and I would go by and I'd say, all right, dude, you're doing this wrong. And he would cuss me and say, it don't matter what you say, I'm going to do it this way. His name was Benny. And Benny would say, just get the blank out of here. And I'd say, you know, if that was anybody else, you'd be in trouble right now. He goes, I don't care. And so one day he was using some cleaning fluid that required a ventilator. And I told him, you need a ventilator on. This will kill you. I said, you can't afford losing more brain cells. And he said, oh, get the blah, blah, blah out of here. It's okay. I walked on, and his boss man came out there. And he told his boss man the same thing. And the boss man said, I've had just about enough. He said, I've only been cutting you some slack because you're David's brother-in-law. He said, but I can't do it. This is deadly, and I can't have it. And so they called me back, and they said, you need to come back here and walk him out. So I walked my brother-in-law out. And he's going, he said, my sister-in-law said, she's going to kill me. She's going to kill me. And I said, well, some people deserve to be killed. And I was really cheering him up. I carried him out, and he says, man, you got to shield me from when she gets up here. She's going to kill me. I said, Benny, I've told you 100 times, stop doing what you're doing. You wouldn't listen. I said, nobody fired you. You fired yourself. And he said, yeah, man, but Lisa's going to kill me. I said, well, like I said, some people deserve to be killed. You got to use it. And so I sit out there and waited on the side of the road with him outside the gate for 30 minutes. And when she picked him up, I could see the steam rolling out of her ears. And he said, help me, man. I said, yon, yon now, bro. And he got in the car. But you know what? Nobody ever got mad at me. There was no need to, you know, because I didn't do anything. As a matter of fact, I kept getting fired many, many times or so. Okay. Means the names are going to be remain silent, changed to protect the guilty. Go ahead. I do that every day with you. It'll be okay. I got UDC and Daniel. I love to do all three of them sometimes the same way. If you want to hug them and strangle them at the same time, you let grace kick in and you just hold them and say, I love you. And say, and think to yourself, I love them enough that I don't want to spend the rest of my life in prison. You know, I can say I thank God that I never had to fire anybody, but I had to lay somebody off. And what it did was they said every department is laying off one person up here. All the support help and engineering to support the help. They said everybody's got to lay off one person. So that's when we were having a time, we had a slack spell. And they said everybody's laying off one person. And the vice president of engineering said, David, and there was three engineering departments. There was racing and sports, and there was fishing and military, and then there was industrial engineering. And I was in all of the, I worked in all the departments with all those guys, but my job was to handle the problems and to make sure they built the boats the same way all the time. The other guys were design, and I was a project engineer for the plant and took care of this. So. So the vice president engineer called me in and he said, David, you got to let one go, lay him off. I said, I really don't want to. He says, I know you don't want to. He said, you got a good team. I said, yeah. He said, but you got to lay one off. And he said, do you want me to pick him? Or do you want to pick him? And do you want me to tell him? Or do you want to tell him? And I said, these people trust me. I work with them every day. I said, I'll pick them and I'll tell them. And so it worked out good, but it's how God works. I got the person that actually been there the least amount of time. He was still learning. And I took him and I set him to the side and I said, you know, they were having layoff people. He said, yes. And I said, well, the time has come that we had to lay off somebody. And I said, you have been here the least amount of time. And you know the least amount, least about our department of anybody else. And I said, I really hate this. It's tearing my nerves up. And I had a tear. I had a tear when I told him. And he looked at me and said, he said, cheer up, dude. It'll be okay. He comforted me. And I said, well, man, I really hate this. He said, I understand. He said, you didn't come and throw me under the bus. He said, I understand what had to happen. He said, but it's going to be all right. And the next week, it was after 9/11. The next week, his unit was activated, and he would have had to leave anyway. That's God. If they had waited another week, I wouldn't have had to lay him off. He would have already been activated. So he was activated anyway. So that was God's timing, God's wisdom, God's mercy, God's grace. And I've seen him on how many times since then, and we get along fine. He didn't even ever talk about the layoff thing, ever, you know, because, again, there was nothing vindictive about anything. It's a very hard thing to do. But knowing later that he was activated, I just said, because I'd have felt bad if I'd have had to take somebody else off and he gets activated. You know what I'm saying? That would have been really, really bad. So that was God. Oh, yeah. That's awesome. That's wild. That's awesome. That's God. That's God taking care of you after you took care of Him. Well, that's what he was saying, how God blessed him. That man said, since you were so good to do this, I'll make sure. But if you're just regular, no, you won't. I did have the vice president of engineering and the COO call me in a room one day and said, shut the door. And so I shut the door, and they said, this one person in your group said, we've had a problem, and we've had a complaint, and we've had this and that, and said, we need you to go fire this person. And I said, that person is not responsible for this. And said, she's being a scapegoat. And they said, we want you to fire her. And I'm sitting there with two of the biggest men under Mr. Fountain, the two biggest men under Mr. Fountain. And I said, I couldn't believe it. I said, no. And they said, David, go fire her. And I said, no. I said, she does not deserve it. She's not going to be fired by me. And I said, and so I went around, and they looked at me. I looked at them. I turned around, opened the door, walked out, and shut the door. I was all, you know, I shut the door. Once I shut that door, went outside, I went, you know what? She was still working there last time I heard. You know. You make it. Yeah. But that day, and then there was a time where this guy used to come from Florida. He was the plant consultant, and he was the guy that helped Mr. Fountain get started. And whenever he came, heads would roll. And he came in, and he always picked my engineering group to do all the projects. And my people were getting tired because they were working from 5 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon. And I said, fellas, it's okay. Said, y'all were getting paid overtime. I'm on salary, and I'm working from 5 in the morning till 10 at night. And even when I got leave and had to get called back in, I get called right back in. Sometimes I stay until 10, 11, 12 o'clock and get back in at 5 in the morning. And one day I come into my group and said, we took a vote, David. I said, you did? He said, yeah, we quit. And I said, why are you going to quit? And they said, because they're working us to death. I said, I know. And so I said, I'll tell you what, I'll go talk to the vice president engineer and I'll see if we can get a little break. So I went to the vice president engineer and I said, we got a problem. I said, my people already took the vote and they quit. He said, why? I said, because they're working us to death. And this guy's working us to death. And he says, I'll handle it. I says, really? I said, because there's a better way to do it. I said, if we do this, this, and this, we don't have to come in at 5 instead of 5. We can come in our regular hours, and we can work his project, and I'll work too. If we just do this, this, and this, he says, okay, I'll go talk to him. And so later on in the afternoon, I come by, and it was just about quitting time. And the vice president of engineering said, you know what? I decided. I said, you talked to him yet? He said, no. I said, you've had all day. You talked to him yet? He said, nope. I said, well, my people are really upset. What we're going to do, he said, you talk. And so I prayed all the way to my office. I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. I said, God, when you're ready for me to talk to this man, you put him in my path. but only when you're ready for me to talk to him and give me wisdom. Because obviously the vice president is chicken. I said, Lord, I need wisdom, I need understanding, and I need you just to give it to me. And so on the way to my office, there he was. He was getting ready to walk up in my office. And so I walked up to him. He was a little bitty fella. And I put my arm around him. I was always doing that. I put my arm around him. And he says, how's it going, David? I said, it's going good. I said, I need to talk to you. He says, okay, talk to me. I said, do you know, and here's how I did it. I just said, do you know if we do this, this, and this, we ain't got to come in every day and work all these long hours. We can just go this, this, and this, and we'll take a lot of pressure and it'll save cut the company money. And he goes, yeah. And here's what he'd say. Home run, David, home run. He said, yeah, starting tomorrow, do that, home run. And I said, well, can I ask you another question? I said, yes. He said, yes. I said, why do you always pick our group to do your projects when it's not even our department? He said, because your people care. And I said, mm-hmm. He said, y'all care. And when I give it, he said, go into these other engineering departments and look at those guys, those other managers. He said, they're on the phone. They got their feet propped up on the desk, and their desk is clean, and they got their feet propped up, and they're talking on the phone. He says, I come in your desk. It looks like a paper plant threw up on your desk. He said, you got paper everywhere. And he says, I can't ever find you. You're all over the floor. He said, that's the guy to get something done. He said, besides, y'all care. And so that was funny. But again, now, the stuff I learned and used at Fountain, I did not always have. And it caused me a lot of pain and a lot of heartache over the years, because I'd get in somebody's face, or I'd get caught up in what they were caught up in, and they'd be jumping up and down, and I'd be jumping up and down. That's not how to do it. So the stuff I told you about Fountain and at Procter & Gamble, I did not always have that. And it was bad. I've seen sometimes, I've told people, I said, I would fire me. How are you going to handle this? I'd fire me. Like you're talking about, I said, I'd fire me. And they go, no, I don't need to fire you. I said, but you know, and I look back over the years, I go, it's amazing that I hadn't been fired because of how I handled things. Yeah, so again, I was going to say is, so I'm not painting, this isn't being egotistical, I'm just trying to tell you things that work. Things that work, not because I did it, it's just things that I've learned that worked. You know what I'm saying? It worked. But if you're going to talk to somebody and confront them, you've got to make them feel comfortable. They got to feel like you're not attacking them. And if it's another, if you're coming to, if there's a guy you're talking to and y'all are ladies, don't put your arm around. You know, if it's another lady, I don't know how y'all do it, you know. But guys, I always put my arm around them, maybe, make them feel comfortable. Yeah, make them feel comfortable. And then know you're not going to attack them. And it, oh, we got this Thursday night too. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's always conditioned. conditional. Conditional. Oh, yeah. Well, I have over the years, I've pastored people that own businesses, and they'll call me to the side and say, come talk to me. I know you've worked this kind of stuff before. Come talk to me. And like I had one guy years ago call me and he said, look, I got these people are not working strong. And said, I got a supervisor who is talking about leaving and taking my other guys and could work a shutdown somewhere, and said, I'll come back in a month. He goes, I can't afford all that. What do I do? He says, instead of leaving, he's tearing them up. I said, well, is he a good worker? He said, I need him. He's really, really good. He knows how to lead people. Ex-military. He knows what he's doing. He was a scout. So he knew I mean, he's good. And so I said, well, I'm going to give you another suggestion. Instead of you having all these talks and blah, 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 here's what you do. Pull him in the office. Tell him that you need him. Tell him what he's doing is not working. It's hurting. And say, you need him so bad that you're going to give him a dollar hour raise. But he's got to be on your team, and he's got to help you. And the guy went, I don't know about all that. I said, it's $40 a week. Your $40 a week is $40 a week to you, but it's like $1,000 to him. I said, just try it. And he went another week or two, and he said, they're killing me. And I said, pull him in the office. Tell him you need his help. Because he's a strong leader, and you need his help. And give him a dollar hour raise. And so about a couple weeks later, I get a call from this guy. And he said, he was talking. I said, well, how did that ever turn out? He said, that guy's the best thing's ever hit this place. I said, well, what happened? He said, I carried him in the office. He said, I told him that I needed him, and I gave him a dollar hour raise. He said, that guy, he said, I'm getting like $10 an hour worth of work out of him for that dollar hour raise. Yeah, I said, see, you didn't have to coerce. You didn't have to beat him up. You didn't have to threaten to fire him. You just gave him that dollar hour raise and said, I need. Yeah. Yeah, so everything worked out good. Everything worked out really, really good, you know. Oh, this was probably about someone their own business. You know, you got to look at that, too, because I've been told to take somebody out. See, here's what they did at Procter. I mean, at Fountain, that same guy, the person that took from Florida, this was the start of this thing. There was a supervisor out there who had lost his daughter, his mama, and his daddy in the same year. And this guy had been a very strong leader and had a wonderful attitude. But because of this, he could barely work. He was pitiful. And the consultant carried me to the side and he says, you're a pastor. I said, yes, sir. He said, you're a counselor. I said, yes, sir. He said, can you do me a favor? I said, what? He says, I want you to take off your engineering hat and put on your counseling hat. I want you to talk to him. I said, okay. And so I went and got him and carried him in another room, and I started talking with him. I started explaining the grieving cycle to him, and I gave him scriptures, and I worked with him on several occasions. And the guy called me, we were somewhere, I think Relay for Life, and the guy called me over to the side to consult me. He said, come here. I said, what? He said, I don't know what you've done to him. I said, but that guy's working like nobody's business, and he's got his attitude back. And I said, oh, I just explained how God was in this and how God was going to help him, and gave him the grieving cycle. He said, and that, like he always said, home run, David, home run. Well, from that time on, he called me in the office and said, can you go to the hospital and talk to this person? Or will you go to the fourth floor and talk to that person? Or will you take this person out on the dock and talk with them? And so when Mr. Fountain would come in, he'd say, this is our engineering, one of our engineering managers. He's also the plant pastor. But, yeah, the plant pastor. He called me the plant pastor. And it was really kind of funny because, what I know, you, if this thing goes on the air, it's going to kill us. All the stuff's all at Fountain. But one day I saw Mr. Fountain. He says, you're getting ready to get married. I said, well, you still want me to do the wedding, right? He says, yeah, and his fiancée was right there with him. He was in Walmart one night, late at night, you were with me. And Mr. Fountain said, And this is David Linton. She knew me. She says, I know David. He says, well, he wants to marry us. I said, well, you said you wanted me to. And I looked over at her and I said, and you know, Bill Shavner, he came here the week before he died, which is very powerful because God did something for him. He was on the Emmaus. He was supposed to be on the Emmaus walk. He never made it to the Emmaus walk. The day that he was supposed to be on the Emmaus walk, I did his funeral. Okay. But he got an answer that he'd been searching for years. He got an answer sitting right where Stephen's at. It was awesome. He told me, he said he felt at peace for the first time in a long time, you know. But I told Mr. Fountain and Bill was his best friend. I told him, I said, I looked over at his wife and I said, well, I buried Bill last year. I figured I'd bury Mr. Fountain next. I'm about to win. She hit the cart and she was just laughing and Mr. Fountain went. He owns a Piggly Wiggly in Tarboro, and he owns a shopping center, and he owns apartments. I don't know, but he's still got plenty of money. He got one of those Dodges, the Dodge that's the 700 horsepower. Yeah, he got the Demon, and I pulled up beside his Demon one day, and that thing, he said, sounds good, don't it? I said, yeah. I said, how fast will it go? He said, I think he told me it went from 0 to 60 in how many seconds. He's like, yeah. Here we go. This will be our last story, y'all. That's good. That's good. Yes. Yes, they will. OSHA does a lot of things. They're powerful. They come in. I know y'all told you about the time somebody was complaining about headaches. They're complaining about headaches in lamination. And so they come out on the thing, and I come from lunch, and people are calling me everywhere. And I'm going, why are y'all calling me? And the COO calls and says, David, come to my office now. And I said, now. I said, okay. And Christian said, they've been calling you left and right. I said, well, for what? They said, OSHA's on site. I said, I'm not the safety manager. And I said, I'm not the safety manager. Why are they calling me? And I walked past and I saw the maintenance manager walking with this guy with two cameras and a notepad. And the maintenance manager normally looked at me and smiled. He was a good Christian man, looked at me and smiled and say things. This time he just went. And I said, what's wrong with him? And I go to the COO's office and open the door and all these people are in there. And they look over and say, this is David Linton. He's our safety manager. The safety manager had quit the week before. And he called OSHA. And so he said, this is David Linton. He's our new safety manager. He's our safety manager. And I went, and look, so I just went, uh-huh. And he says, David, take this man here. And there was that guy with those cameras. So take Randy out and take him anywhere he wants to go. And I said, okay. And so I'm carrying them out. And the Bible says in Philippians, in no way be terrified of your adversaries. This is just a token of your salvation. And so I looked at him and said, what'd you say who you work for? And he said, OSHA. I said, who? He said, OSHA. I said, who? It was real noisy. He said, OSHA. I said, kazoom tight. Right to start with. And he goes, he looks at me real funny. And I said, I knew you had to be somebody very important. He says, why? I said, because I just passed you with our maintenance manager, and he had the same look on his face that my boys had on their face when they'd messed their pants up and didn't want to tell me. He laughed, and he said, let me tell you something, man. I said, why? He put his hand on me. He was laughing. He said, let me tell you something. Take me out one way and bring me back the same way. He says, I'm going to write you up all the way there. I'm going to write you up all the way back. He says, so how about do us both a favor and hit me the same way, both back and forth? I said, okay, I can do that. So he cut me slack, and he said, we're going to come back. Can you tell me when you'd like for me to come back? I went, okay. I mean, the guy was being very hospitable, you know. So, yeah, I'm just saying as though normally they come in and say, because I have had one of those guys come in and go, you're going to have a bad day. And I see the same the next week, a guy come in, and I was walking through, and the COO come to me and said, hey, David, what are you doing today? And I said, I'm trying to get this straight. And he went, here. And I said, what? He said, you're the new environmental director. I said, just like that. He said, just like that. And so I went in his office, and he said, come and sign some papers this afternoon because this is serious stuff. I said, okay. So I walked in his office, and he said, sign these papers. I said, what does papers say? He said, well, there's a guy in Texas that just buried some oil drums. He's 70 years old. He went out behind the plant, buried some oil drums in the ground, said he's serving 20 years. For him, that's a life sentence. He says, so I'm trying to tell you, if we don't do this right, David, he said, I'm going to jail. That's what he said. The COO, he said, I'm going to jail. And I just started laughing. He said, what are you laughing at, big boy? You just signed those papers. You're going with me. And I said, well, I always did want to start a prison ministry like that. That's before I was here. I said, I always did want to start a prison ministry. And he slapped that table and said, will you please take this serious? I said, I'm taking it serious, man. But then the guy came in a couple of days later, and he said, you're fixing to have a bad day. And he went and got his camera. And I called the maintenance manager and called the COO, and they're all out there because he thought he found a problem. And actually, it was a problem. But I didn't know about it because I just got the job. I mean, you know, but we got it fixed. Everything got fixed. But that guy weren't good. That guy was mean. He was absolutely mean. And then the other guy, the other head guy from Diener, he was mean. But you know what? I got a chance to be his spiritual director on the Emmaus walk. And he came to me and apologized to me. He said, David, I'm so sorry. He said, I made life miserable for you. And he said, I shouldn't have. He said, will you please forgive me? And I said, yeah, I forgive you. And you know, now we go out to lunch. He's on Mighty Army. I just saw him a few days ago. I was going to get my hair cut. He came walking by with some more Diener people. And he said, I want you to meet David Linton. He's an awesome dude. And we get talking back and forth. And he said, let's go to lunch soon. And I was just going to get a haircut, and he was just coming by. So, you know, it's amazing how God works things. Y'all, we got to get out of here. We just run our mouth. It's 8:30. We just run our mouth. Okay. Huh? We're very good at running our mouths. And remember, because I don't want you to think I'm being egotistical, is when I told you all the things that worked. For everything I tell you that worked, I've done 50 things that didn't work. I'm telling you, you got to learn the right way. And what happened to me, the best thing that ever happened to me was becoming a Christian. And that changed things, becoming a Christian. And not only becoming a Christian, but the second thing that happened to me is I started studying the Bible, and I started studying leadership. And as I started studying leadership in the Bible, everything changed for me. Everything changed for me. But until that point, I would have never hired me. I tell people all the time, I wouldn't have hired me. I would have fired me. Yes. And so you grow into it. Everything you grow into. Has anybody got any more comments or questions or anything? Who? I guarantee you Thursday night, I'll be one of the first ones to the front. He'll be a long win. Frank will be a long win. I'll go sit there and wait for all those guys. Look at him. Look at him. He's thinking about it. He's thinking about it hard. Look, one of the last times I was in the chaplain's office when they left, because I had to take everybody to their places. And when they come back, I was sitting in the chaplain's office. I said, "You never even moved." I said, "I've done my stuff and come back and gone back out again and come back. And I'm just having to sit down when y'all come in." They said, "No, you hadn't. You've been here the whole time." I said, No. Let's don't go there. Father, we love you. We praise your name. We thank you for this crazy night. Lord, help us, God, to grow. And Lord, like I said, there were so many times I would have fired me. I would not have been around me. I was not a very pleasant person to be around. I talked vulgar, and I had a rotten attitude. And I thank you for saving me. And I thank you for not only saving me, but delivering me from me. And Lord, teaching me and showing me. And Lord, I thank you for that. And Lord, I know I'm still growing, and they're still growing. We're all still growing. There's a lot more to learn. Help us all to grow in you. In the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen. That's right.